Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to the Along Came a Writers Network. Opinions expressed on our shows do not necessarily reflect those of our network. Welcome to the Along Came a Writer Network.
Okay, I am going to play my opening song. It didn't play as it was supposed to, so bear with me. Welcome to Chat Noir, Mystery and Suspense. It's my pleasure to interview two authors today, longtime friend of mine, Anita Higman, and her daughter and co-author, Hillary McMullen, who together wrote a gothic mystery titled The Ruby Locket. This is Linda Kozar, and I'm your host of Chat Noir, Mystery and Suspense. I want to welcome Anita and Hillary in a minute, but first I want to introduce Sharon Watson. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Sharon is going to be hosting a new show called Truest Voice that will deal with nonfiction authors. It will be primarily nonfiction, right?
Yes, it will be nonfiction of all areas of nonfiction as well, memoir, self-help, just any type of nonfiction books I can find interviews for.
Okay, and we'll be announcing when her show is going to air. So let's thank you very much, Sharon, and I am going to say hello to Anita and Hillary. Hi, girls.
Hi, hello. Linda. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, so glad to have you. Now, Anita Higman is a best-selling and award-winning author and has over 40 books published. She's been a Barnes & Noble Author of the Month for Houston and has a BA in the combined fields of speech, communication, psychology, and art. A few of Anita's favorite things are good movies, which are hard to come by these days, fairy tales, traveling, gardening, exotic teas, and brunch with her friends. That sounds lovely. Feel free to drop by Anita's website at www.anitahigman.com or connect with her on her Facebook reader page. She would love to hear from you. Hillary McMullen recently celebrated a birthday on September 21st. I noticed that on your Facebook, Hillary. Am I right?
Almost September 20th, but yes, thank you.
Okay, I was close. Okay, well, happy belated birthday. She received an English degree from Sam Houston State University, has published a variety of works, including a middle grade novel, and has contributed to several devotional books. Hillary lives in the charming town of Navasota, Texas, with her husband and two cats. And you can find her on Facebook as well. I'm going to start off the bat with Hillary, because I noticed on your Facebook page that you are an animal lover.
Yes.
From a lot of your posts. Yes. And you love squirrels. My youngest daughter loves squirrels too.
That's
so
true.
I was really amused by that. Before we get into the gothic book, The Ruby Locket, you guys wrote together, I want to ask Anita how you got into writing mysteries, because that's how we were in the same Spyglass mystery collections. And how did you first start?
Well, I remember there was kind of an interest really from decades ago. I remember when I was in college in the 1970s, and it seems like there were a lot of popular gothic mysteries back then, and you would walk into, you know, what was similar to the kind of the five and dime type stores, and there would be a whole wall of these mysteries, and all the covers looked very similar. You may remember something
yes.
from that, and they would always be this castle and a tower, and the light was on very top of the tower, and of course it was at nighttime, and the woman had to flee from the castle from some horror
yes.
that was in the house. And she always had to flee in night, and she still had her nightgown on, of course. And so there was always gossamer fabric flying and the moonlight and everything. And all the covers looked very similar. And somehow
yes.
I must have got sucked in. And I always thought, you know, I always kind of liked the just a little bit of extra that the Gothic novel had. And then in more recent years, I read... Anne Rice, no, I take that back, Anne Radcliffe. Actually, Anne mm-hmm. Rice was sort of the Gothic queen modern day, but back in the 1700s, Anne Radcliffe was the queen of Gothic. And so I became such a fan of hers. And way back in the 70s, I don't even remember if I read any of those novels. It could be that I knew what the insides were going to be, and I just sort of made it up in my head. I don't know. But I always thought they looked interesting, and it always intrigued me, those covers. And then if anybody out there has read the Anne Radcliffe books, oh, my goodness, they are amazing. The Mysteries of Udolpho and the Romance of the Forest, which was mentioned in one of the Jane Austen novels. And I apparently, because of that, because she put it in there, she must, Jane Austen must have been a Gothic fan also. And
she lived
she
it.
Wrote Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey, which was also Gothic. And so I have a feeling Jane Austen was also a Gothic fan.
It wouldn't surprise me either. I collect Victoria Holt. Books. So I have quite a collection of those. And you're right about those covers. And, you know, they're just intriguing. Yeah.
They are.
And there's something about the Gothic genre, and we need to bring it back. So I was so happy to see that you guys wrote this book. Now, when you first started writing, though, can you tell us about your first mystery books?
Yes, it was a series that came out originally through Barber, and then the last one was not. Eventually, they closed down their mystery line, and so the last one had to kind of come out a little bit more on its own. But it was the Volstead Manor series, and it, even though it was a modern-day contemporary novels, it did have to do with Prohibition. And lots of secrets in the house and lots of things to discover, you know, buried, secret, scary things. And that's what you've got to have with a Gothic mystery series. You not only have to have a puzzle, but you also have to have some of the elements of Gothic writing, you know, and which are, you know, scary turns of events, scary secrets, dark passageways. A lot of times...
And I loved it.
You know, madness and mayhem, let's put it that way.
Yes, and a pair of fangs too, let's not forget that. I love that in your
book.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a little a sprinkling of that as well as the fang thing.
Yes. Now, Hillary, did your mom, growing up, did your mom instill a love of reading and writing in you? And or is this sort of an innate ability that she just sort of developed in you? Was it all already there?
Well, I definitely grew up loving to read, and there were just books all over the house, and I'd definitely say my mom was instrumental in that. But as for writing, you know, I would occasionally write some things. I started writing pretty young, but I'd only write about a page and a half, and then I'd give up because I was such a perfectionist, and I thought, oh, the story couldn't possibly go anywhere, and I would give up really quickly because the editor side of my brain is actually a lot stronger than the writer side. But I finally decided to hop on board with my mom in writing a book, and She didn't, it was gentle nudging. It wasn't, you know, pushing. That kind of sounds kind of like a harsh word, but it was, you know, gentle nudging, and she gave me the accountability I needed to finish a chapter and send it to her. So that's just what I needed. So now I can write with her. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there you need to develop that balance, we all do, between the inner editor and the writer, and just sort of like push through it and just write and edit later. But I'm still working on that myself. Now, this question is for both of you. Do you think mystery writers have twisted minds?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like, no, why are we so killy? We just want to kill everybody off in our books.
Because we can't do it in real life, I guess. I don't
I mean, there's got to be something clinically wrong with us.
Now, the way I tell people about, as a writer in general, I don't know it's specifically related to mystery writers, but I always tell people, you know, I'm kind of a creative person and I live without skin, which means everything that I feel more intensely than the average Joe on the street. When someone comes to me and they're telling me their tale of woe, it hurts me all the way to my soul. I mean, I feel everything. I hurt for people. It's hard for me to watch the news because it's so very painful, you know, and when people are hurting, I'm hurting. I feel everything much more intensely. And I think really many creative types, whether they're in the field of other kinds of art and music and fine art, other things, I think they feel these things too. And that is just the way God created them, and they can't help it. And so they just infuse their work with a great deal of passion, that other people would not be able to do, say other temperaments would not be able to do. And so now whether mystery writers go beyond that with an extra edge of insanity, I don't know. Maybe you can answer. You're a mystery writer too. Maybe you should answer that.
I know. I try not to think of myself as a scary person. But, you know, our minds do go there, don't they? They go there.
They do. And sometimes it's like a nightmare. You know how our dreams and nightmares, we work out things in the night. And it could be people read these mysteries to work out things and how hard life is. And when they get to the end and there is justice for all, and in sometimes real life there is not justice, but in books there can be, and they feel satisfied. So it's like they're working out something. People love a good mystery. They do.
Yeah, it's like a roller coaster. It's like you're going on this thrill ride, and it should be. A good mystery is like a thrill ride. But I think there's a mystery in everything, don't you? I mean, how about you, Hillary?
Sure, yeah. I think my mom put it pretty well. I don't know if I could put it any better than she did as for, you know, how mystery authors have a little bit of an edge to them or an extra creative edge, I think. But when I was writing the Ruby Locket, it definitely was a kind of a new thing for my mind to go there and to write those things. And sometimes I'm like, "Man, Mom, this is pretty dark." And she's like, "Well, this is a, you know, genre." And so I was kind of like, "Okay."
Like, you've got to go there.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, and you know, I sort of think that all books have an element of mystery in them, and there should be some romance too. You've got to throw in some of that. I'm going to read the blurb for this book, for the Ruby Locket, and it's the first in a series. When Anne's mother agrees to marry a wealthy, mysterious man, she expects a nice mansion in the hills. But their new home, Belrose Abbey, is more like a castle, imposing, cold, and full of shadows. The more Anne explores the corridors and vacant rooms and dusty crannies, the more she discovers about the Abbey's master, her soon-to-be stepfather, Ivan Helsberg. As her mother's wedding draws closer, Anne begins to harbor a creeping suspicion that all is not well at Belrose Abbey. Okay, tell us more about this. Tell us about the series.
Well, it's typical Gothic. In fact, I noticed some reviewers were saying as well that it has to do with insanity, it has to do with murder, you know, just all kinds of of elements.
All the elements, yeah.
Yeah, elements of Gothic writing. But, you know, in creepy corridors, and they go down in the catacombs because this giant estate with this huge mansion, you know, it's really kind of a castle. There's all these creepy catacombs underneath the mansion.
Oh, I love it.
At Melrose Abbey. And so there's a lot to uncover in those catacombs. And then, of course, you have to have the terrifying housekeeper. The head housekeeper, Miss Easton, is full of secrets and terror, and she is basically a dangerous woman. And so you've got to have
is
one
she,
of those. And of course we...
Is she like Frau Blücher?
I'm actually old enough to get that joke.
Yes, that's from a young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
okay.
Is that from Young Frankenstein?
I've been
right?
saving that sound effect for a moment like this. Okay.
I can't believe you did it. That's really great, Linda. Yeah. No, she is not like Cloris Leachman in Young Frankenstein. She is, I would say, a little more like the housekeeper, head housekeeper in Rebecca.
Oh, but she was frightening. She scared me. She scared the pants off of me.
Oh, me too. Me too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was very
so. How did you guys come up with the idea for this book and the plot? Did you sit there and kind of plot it out together ahead of time, or how'd you do this?
Well, now you're going to find this interesting, since you are hoping to write with your daughters one day. We do write a little differently, and so even though we have a blast writing together, occasionally we butt heads very gently, in that she is not a seat of the pants writer. I am, and she likes to plot it out. In fact, when she came over to do this radio interview with me for us to do this together, we have been plotting out the second book. And so she was wanting to go, I think, once again, chapter by chapter. And I was just saying, well, it looks like we've got enough for today, and we'll see what happens in the other chapter. You know? So we're always kind of, you know, having a little bit of, we compromise. We have to compromise. Like, maybe I'll let her go ahead and plot out some more chapters, and then she also lets me take the book in another direction if I need to. But the thing is, what makes it easier, though, is that we write in first person, and so we'll
love
take
first person.
Our own character. In other words, I'll take the mom character, Daphne Knight, and she'll take the daughter, Anne Knight, and then we'll go back and forth in first person and write those. And boy, I tell you, Linda, it really keeps things fresh, and it really keeps that particular voice very different. Now, our writing does mesh enough so that when we're writing the narrative of it, it still sounds like the same basic author. But when we're writing the two different characters, they really are from, you know, different points of view. They're different people writing. And so I think it keeps it fresh. And I think it makes the voices very different than if one person was going to write it. And I hope the reader gets a final say on this. I really hope the readers feel this way.
Well, and to our listeners, if you're fascinated by the thought of this book now, like I am, with all the scary stuff and the catacombs and all that, Anita and Hillary are giving away a free e-copy of this book. If you are interested, go to either Anita and Hillary's Facebook pages or mine, and just put your name down there. Say you'd like to be in the running for a copy of this book, and you might be the winner. Okay. So I wanted to ask this. Now, were either of you ever in kind of a Gothic situation? Like, did you ever stay at a scary bed and breakfast or a house or a creepy mansion of any sort? Or visit like a museum?
That is a really good question. I'm sure that I have. Well, first of all, let me give you the home that I grew up in. My daughter never saw that home. My parents ended up building another home on the farm with their gas money. But before that, we had a creepy old 100-year-old farmhouse, and it was pretty scary. We had bats in the attic. We had a snake in the cellar. We had a secret opening floor where the previous owner, I think, had kept his money or secrets or something.
Oh, wow.
And there was always something. And then we had a cellar even below that, below the basement even. And I tell you, that old farmhouse always gave me the creeps as a kid. And, you know, it even had one of those old-fashioned furnaces in the floor. And you look down in there, and it sort of looks like the fires of hell down in there. And I mean,
oh, for kids, no wonder.
I'm telling you, for a little kid to grow up in a place like this, it was scary. And I'm thinking somewhere along the line, this probably fed into the whole Gothic thing, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's awesome. Now, both of you, I'm going to ask Hillary first. Do you get inspiration from watching old kind of cheesy vintage scary movies, like with Christopher Lee, you know, like, oh, or like The Tingler with Vincent Price or any of those?
You know, I actually don't watch very many scary movies, but really the only scarier kind of old, like black and white things that I watched were Hitchcock. But that's not necessarily cheesy.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's really the only thing I can think of when it comes to kind of spooky. I'm really not much of a scary movie watcher, although I do enjoy the occasional mystery show that has some mystery elements to it. For instance, Grand Hotel is a great example of that. I don't know if you've heard of that show, but it's a little bit like Downton Abbey, except it's much more fast paced and it has a lot more mystery. And it also
is all in Spanish.
it's really, really good. So,
wow, I haven't seen that one.
If you have very conservative listeners, I will throw in: be ready for some spicy scenes. Let's put it that way. Now, I know Downton Abbey has a little bit of spice here and there too, if you know what I mean. But this had even more spice. You'd have to be ready for some questionable scenes. However, I will say, there are 66 episodes, I think, and man, it's hard to stop watching. I mean, because it is extremely fast-paced, and it's mystery, and it unfolds it's just brilliantly done, really.
How about you, Anita? Do you get at any of your inspiration, like The House on Haunted Hill? I mean, that's very Gothic. Even The House from Psycho, you know, kind of falls into the whole Gothic look.
Yes, I know this is hard to believe, but I just watched Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, just several months ago, and that was for the very first time.
No way.
It was the first time, and it truly was scary. And that twist at the end was very unexpected. Wow.
Alfred Hitchcock
really got his heart right. Yeah, he did.
And it really had a lot of those elements. Yeah, the same kind of Gothic combined with horror, of course. But
yes, and the black and white even made that more intense. But also got some inspiration from the book Dracula, the original classic. In fact, I was so inspired by
Mary Shelley.
The actual opening of the Ruby Locket opens in a similar way to Dracula, even though Mary.
Oh, wait, Frankenstein was Mary Shelley. Dracula was not Mary. Right.
From Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
Bram Stoker was Dracula. Yeah.
Yes.
I had to correct myself.
Absolutely. Thank you for the correction. And that, of course, you know, Dracula is fantasy and ours is not. But I just wanted to open it with that same kind of chilling effects as from Dracula. And then this
setting
one,
the scene.
We were thinking about, I'm sorry?
No, like setting the scene. Yeah.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Great.
Wanted to set that scene right from the very beginning that it's going to have a Gothic kind of scary feel to it. And try to run that all the way through. And when we were plotting out the second book in the series, we were thinking of even relating it somewhat then back to Mary's novel, which is Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's novel. And so we hope to bring out maybe a little bit from that book in the second one. both, of course, masterpieces in literature.
Okay, we are down to our last 5 minutes, and it's time for our lightning round. And hopefully some of you have chill bumps now, because we're ready for our lightning round. Okay. All right, girls, you can both answer this. You can answer together or separately. More gothic, the Addams Family or the Munsters?
Probably the Addams Family. Not that I've really seen a lot of it, but
I would agree with that, Addams Family.
Like, who did it better? Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I agree. The Munsters' house, even though it was spooky and scary, the Addams Family house was a lot better because you had Thing crawling around, you know, it's just disembodied hand. And then you had the Marlin hanging on the wall with a half a man sticking out of it. Doorbell. Yeah, even the doorbell.
I particularly like roses that are upside down.
Yeah. Okay, now this one has to be for Anita, because I don't think you'll remember this, Hillary. Heckel and Jekyll or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because I'm not familiar with the other one.
The cartoon. It was the cartoon with those blackbirds. Okay. All right. Well. Okay.
Interesting.
This one falls in with the Frau Blücher thing, and I'm not going to do the horse whinny again. Is it Frankenstein or Frankenstein?
You know, I've heard it both ways, so I really don't know.
Okay. it depends on if you like Young Frankenstein better than the original Frankenstein
movies.
Because
that's the way they were pronouncing it, Young Frankenstein. But that was such an absolute crazy parody on all of it. I mean, you couldn't really trust them, right? They just wanted to say it the way they wanted to say it to be funny. So actually, I don't know. Probably Frankenstein.
Okay, so Hillary, which is scarier, a gypsy curse or a scary hearse?
Probably a gypsy curse. You don't know what's going on in there. It could be bad, I think.
Yeah, and you know, some of these gothic novels had things like gypsy curses, you know, which is kind of cheesy these days, but I think one of those old time hearses with the plumes and everything, the carriages, they're kind of scary looking. If you go to Houston, has a funeral museum, and they have some of those in there. And we've toured that with our writers group, and they're kind of creepy too.
Okay, this is for both of you.
We need to tour that sometime. That's a good one, Linda.
Oh, it's really good. A lot of history there. Okay, so Dorian Gray or 50 Shades of Gray?
Kind of a spicy question. 50 Shades of Gray is silliness, but Dorian Gray is definitely creepy. That was one of the best books I ever read in high school. I loved it.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was creepy.
Very creepy.
Well, okay. The main thing I'm going to say, but no, in case readers are wondering out there, I have never read 50 Shades of Grey, nor do I ever intend to read the book or watch the movie, just in case there's a question out there.
Me either. Me Thank either. You. Okay, so what's worse, if you like a vampire or an umpire?
Well, I like a vampire because I like vampire movies. Books and movies. I can't help it. I do.
And yeah. How about you, Hillary?
What's creepier? I'd probably say to like a vampire is creepier.
Yeah, that is pretty creepy.
No, or how about a zombie umpire? You know, now that would be creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I know or Frankenstein.
I'm not as big on zombies. I don't think they're as interesting as vampires. But that's probably not your question. But anyway.
Well, because vampires have, they have intellect. They have intelligence, you know. They're just lumbering.
That's right.
Okay, we are out of time. Can you believe it? We are out of time. And I just want to thank you, ladies. And I have to have you back when you do the rest of the series. But listeners, if you're just tuning in, and if you are, your timing's off. Today we had a great chat on Chat Noir with authors Anita Hickman and her daughter and co-author Hillary McMullen. They're on Facebook and other social media. You can find them there. Enter to get this free ebook. Google them, go to Amazon and buy their books. Buy all of Anita's 40 plus books. And don't forget to tune in to Chat Noir Mystery and Suspense last Wednesday of every month at noon for another blood tingling tale. Get those chill bumps up. We're ready for another show. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Okay.